Good morning. Welcome to the Fan Morning Show. It's Justin and Ailish. Snoozy night for us. Did you hit the hay early or what?
You know I hit the hay early. Not as early as I would have liked.
Really? Going around bragging that you go to bed at 8 p.m., wake up at 3, watch sports.
I haven't pulled off the 8 p.m. yet. The 8 p.m. is happening, I think, tomorrow. Because the Leafs are in San Jose.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a chance I see puck drop, but I will see the whole game.
It's exciting for you.
Power of technology.
What'd you do with all your time off last night?
It wasn't all that eventful. A little beef stew in the Instant Pot. One episode of House of the Dragon. Pretty calm.
Hey, it is stew season.
I love stew season.
I love a good stew season, a good roast.
I don't feel comfortable doing that myself. But stew,
you literally put it in the pot and put the lid on and don't touch it for hours.
Yeah, but that's not what Nana did. You know what I mean? And it's not going to turn out like Nana.
That's true. It'll never
It's
going
to be lesser than. But stews, I mean, 35 minutes, and you're just, again, the power of technology.
See, I do the slow cooker. But the problem with the slow cooker is all day long, you're like, oh my God, it smells so good. Like you got to wait 6 to 8 hours for your satisfaction. Whereas you got, 35 minutes in this high-tech Instapot or whatever it is.
Well, you got to get yourself one.
No.
If you like slow cooking, I mean, you're more prepared than I am generally in life.
Yeah.
Like you'll have something. You'll have a piece of meat thawed perfectly, seasoned.
Bet. Right now in the fridge, I got one.
Maybe a wet rub going on. Like, you'll have the whole thing ready to rock. I need to scramble, get something thawed as quick as possible, and get dinner on the table as quick as possible.
You're definitely the guy that, like, your mom would call you, oh, honey, like, you take the chicken breasts out for dinner, and you're like, crap! Like, you throw them in the sink on, like, hot water and try to defrost them in 30 minutes while she's on her way home. You are that guy.
Although, I feel like skip the dishes, whatever. You're getting food ordered to your house. That's something I will not do.
I'm giving away free promos here.
Well, I think it's radio.
I do sometimes order
from
a box service.
I feel like that.
Just to spice things
you're
up.
You're once a week at least doing that.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So you had a little beef stew. You watched House of the Dragon.
What did you do?
I watched the movie. And I think we need to stop trusting Rotten Tomatoes. How about that? That's my take of the morning.
I don't feel like I've ever trusted Rotten Tomatoes.
Well, I'll see something and I'll be like, all right, like, let me just see what the general feel of the audience is.
Mm-hmm.
And so last night I'm like, best thrillers. I think I used Netflix, let's just say. Typed it in. I said, best thrillers right now. You know, it's Halloween season. We have to talk about Halloween soon. And I looked it up and there's one I hadn't seen. Nightcrawler from 2014. Starring Jake Gyllenhaal.
Okay.
It's like supposed to be dark and like whatever. Sucked. 95% on tomato meter on Rotten Tomatoes. 86% audience score. Like that's big. That's a huge amount of positive rankings.
Have you ever considered that you're the problem?
No, this movie blows. Like it was so dumb. I don't know. If you've watched did you feel the same disappointment that I did?
Maybe our like critical eye for things has changed with the Netflix viewing experience. Like that's, I don't even know if we can talk about Netflix, but
it's too late.
It's like, I can't find anything on there. I can't find a single thing. It's like curated for people that have like that really short attention span where like it could be 45 minutes of pure garbage, but they have some weird cliffhanger at the end, which forces you to invest another 45 minutes. Like that's all it's so predictable. I don't think you know this about me, but I'm a TV snob a little bit.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean by that?
Like I look down upon people who don't watch good television.
What's good television right now? You're like, Ailish, go home and binge this.
I'm watching We Own the City right now. It's pretty good.
Literally never heard of that.
I mean, I'm like a big Better Call Saul guy.
That's great.
That's the best show that I think I watched this year.
I think a lot of people are in agreement.
But like I'm, you know, usually HBO, I'm in that range. Stuff that you generally have to pay for.
Succession.
Succession's a great show.
Okay, then we're on the same page.
But if you're like, I always bring up the like Chicago Med stuff. Like that stuff that's like made for network primetime. I generally have a difficulty with, because it is created in a way to just hook you rather than like actually tell a good story.
Okay.
So I feel like I can flag those things really easily, and not that you could just tell like where it is in the TV guide, what type of show it's going to be.
This is intense.
I'm just saying, like, Netflix has its own little identity where it's like trying to,
and it's
basically just trying to make you watch another
true crime
episode
at this point.
Yeah, it's just like shock value.
You want to know about a serial killer from any decade of any type of murder?
I don't think there's any, like, there's untapped murder in the world, but I don't think they've not told a story. Like, they've gone through it.
I think that
they've gone through every true crime thing that could be
potentially
remotely
interesting. They're better than the police at this point. They're exactly solving murders. Yeah. But I wanted to watch a good thriller because it's spooky season, and that one sucked. So don't bother if you're listening, Nightcrawler. I just thought it sucked.
They're just pumping these things out way too fast.
And don't trust Rotten Tomatoes anymore.
And I think that Nightcrawler's in that vein where it's just like, we need to fill this content space, and it's just too much. You're not even putting good storytelling into it.
It wasn't good. But nonetheless, no Toronto sports to watch, so.
There's a show I like coming out Sunday. White Lotus, you watch that?
I've heard that's amazing.
Very, very good.
Okay.
That's sort of my jam.
Okay, love that.
It's my lane.
Andrew Mississauga says that he totally agrees with me.
That Nightcrawler sucked?
Yeah.
What was your quote?
It blows. Don't watch it. all right. Well, that was our night off. I think it's better when we have sports to watch because I felt like, what do I do with all this free time?
Are you watching House of the Dragon?
Yeah. I'm a little behind, though.
I just watched the third episode. It is actually really good. I thought it was going to
I went in with a little bit of a nose up. Man, this is going to never be as good as Game of Thrones.
And I thought, okay, you just mailed in the last season
of
that.
Well, bitter taste in your mouth.
So you're going to do the same thing where you're just trying, we're desperate for content. We're desperate for a new prestige show, and you're going to do a terrible job, but they're actually doing a pretty good job.
There's a couple scenes coming up for you. You're on episode 3.
I've been like actively avoiding things, but all I see is like positive and like, wow, this
is
it's
good.
So I'm excited.
There's some,
we need a few more off nights.
Yeah. When's our next off night? I think there's one coming up in next Tuesday. Again, not a single Toronto sports. You know what? Tuesdays will be our movie TV show viewing nights.
Yeah. And like, Wednesdays we'll have a little report.
And that's the night after Halloween. So we can pick something good. All right. Yeah. Lots of people texting in good movies and stuff, so that's helpful. Let me know, 590-590. And you know what? I have a plane ride to and from coming up, so what should I download
the plane? I didn't know you were lifting off for this. I thought you were road tripping again.
It's like 10 hours to drive to Dartmouth. I got stuff to do here.
Look,
I got to get there. I got to get to Beantown. I'm going to Bruins Red Wings on Thursday night.
Look at you. You're holding a lot of stuff
so
back.
So you know the Wake and Rake picks coming from that game.
My Red Wings are disappointing.
All right. So went to put my head on the pillow late last night feeling, my eyes aren't, you know, sore from watching 73 different sporting events at the same time. Feeling well rested. I opened up Twitter and, a little late night news dump. Toronto Maple Leafs put Jake Muzzin on LTIR. You might not even know that if you're listening right now because it was a little sneaky draw. I think the only person that actually tweeted it out when I first saw it was Cap Friendly. Cap Friendly out here breaking news that the Leafs put Jake Muzzin on LTIR. So that move adds $5,625,000 to their LTIR salary pool. And they place Kyle Clifford on IR.
See, that move gives me like, okay, my ears are perked up a little bit. Why did they need to
also do that?
Why did they need to put more on long-term injured reserve? It could be that Kyle Clifford got injured. Do you remember Clifford injury?
No, I don't.
Monday? I mean, that might be a product of watching the game and fast forward.
I don't remember really seeing him anyway.
At 3 a.m. But yeah, I don't think he played much. Maybe that was part of the reason he got banged up. But like, it didn't seem like there wasn't a rush on Muzzin because there didn't have to be. You had space. You weren't bringing anyone in yet. There wasn't a trade imminent. There was nothing really going on, so you could take your time with Muzzin and figure out exactly what it is. But now that Muzzin and Clifford have joined Murray and Liljegren on LTIR, you literally have, like, untapped flexibility.
Rolling in the dough, Justin.
They got tons of money. They can do whatever they want.
You're going to get a contract for you, contract for you.
Exactly.
Everyone's
trade
getting
here,
money.
Trade there. Let's just bring in the reinforcements, not the fourth line ones, the ones that'll actually make a difference.
All right. So they have, like, you see this and you think they're going to make a big move, or are you thinking of last season or so where they didn't capitalize?
It's definitely worth bringing up last season. But mm-hmm. the context of last season is important, I guess, for and against the argument of bringing someone in. So at multiple points last year, Jake Muzzin went down. They had three opportunities, I think, to put him on long-term injured reserve, even with the Kucherov idea in mind, where night one, Jake, you're back in the lineup. They could have done that three times. They could have taken that loophole. They could have went that route if they wanted to. But all three times, when Jake Muzzin went down in mid-September, or mid-December, rather, mid-January, and then again in late February, they didn't do it. They kept the money clean. They kept the money off the books. Mm-hmm. They resisted any urge to add to what would be a postseason roster with Muzzin, because I guess they thought getting Muzzin back in the lineup was the best course of action. And maybe it was, because he actually played pretty well in the playoffs. But now it's October 26th, and they have the same issue. And I don't think, it's not late February where you could easily just say, oh, Jake, we'll just come back night one playoffs. No problem. You're asking to sit the entire season if that's the case. But I don't think that's even really, that's not priority one here. Like, clearly, Muzzin's dealing with something. He's dealing with recurring issues. He's dealing with legitimate health problems. And it really puts the Leafs in a bind mm-hmm. because there's clearly issues that they need to address. The Muzzin-sized hole is huge because you're expecting elite contributions from this guy, really. Like, he hasn't been able to measure up, but that's what the expectation was, that he would be a huge, huge part of your defensive core. And now you don't know if you can, A, fill the gap, or B, he will ever come back. So it really leaves the Leafs in a bind. But if they've determined that he's not going to be available, if they determine that at any point, it is 100% on them to go get help.
Oh, there's no chance in my mind that they sit here with $5.5 million and don't do anything.
The fingers crossed that Muzzin can come back thing just isn't acceptable. They can get through most of the regular season without him, sure. But if he's not going to be available to you, at some point you have to fill that role. Because it's clear they're not good enough. The Sandin-Hall second pairing is not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Giordano probably cannot move up in your lineup anymore. And Mete is not working.
Nope.
Jordy Ben is, we still don't know if he's a thing. Liljegren's not back yet.
What's his timeline?
I couldn't tell you.
You never even hear about Jordy Ben anymore.
Oh.
Okay, great.
So it's a really difficult spot. Because you can't make a decision on Jake Muzzin in April, in October, right? We're 7 months away. So I don't know exactly what they're going to do unless they have determined, unless Jake Muzzin's like, man, I don't think I can do it anymore. Or the doctors are like, he's at risk of suffering serious long-term health effects if he continues to put himself in the same position, which is to suffer either head or neck injuries over and over and over again.
Well, you heard how Mitch Marner discussed this, and maybe he tipped the hand a little bit about how bad this was for Jake Muzzin this past week, talking about how it's much more important for life after hockey and his family and his health. And then they put him on LTIR. So that aligns with the wording of Mitch Marner's concerns. Daniele just told me in my ear that Ben and Liljegren have been put in conditioning stint time. So that seems like they're closer than maybe.
So more
heard.
Bottom pairing defensemen on the way, right?
Does this make you think Jacob Chychrun? Jacob Chicky.
I mean, it does, but it doesn't.
Well, it's interesting because he's just like, he can't find the right fit. I know the Sens have been rumored about it, but our buddy Kipper, I was just looking at the article in his new weekly columns.
I saw that. I didn't know it was Kipper who wrote that. I saw it when I was
Nick Cabrio suggested in his Toronto Star column that the Maple Leafs could land Jacob Chychrun without parting with currently sidelined defenseman Jake Muzzin or Matthew Nyes. He said the Coyotes informed the Leafs and the Senators that a deal could be built around two first-round picks.
Huh. I don't think Kyle Dubas is licensed to trade two first-round picks.
Well, now they have a gaping hole.
They do.
On their blue line and $5 million of spending money.
So I think
just you,
I think you can you can find a balance here. I think you can find a balance where, okay, you now have the flexibility, but let's not spend all of the Jake Muzzin money because we don't know exactly what, well, they might know what his future is. They might know exactly what his future is, and that might be Jake Muzzin's not going to be around anymore. That's entirely possible. But you probably want to leave the door open, and you need to improve right now. So why not spend some of it so that when or if Muzzin comes back or someone comes back, you can massage the situation a little better and you don't have to give up multiple first round picks. Like, it seems like they have to make a trade to make themselves better on defense. But if they make the trade where you use all of Jake Muzzin's money and multiple first round picks, then you're both all in on the season and closing the door on Jake Muzzin. I'm just not sure you can do that in late October.
I think it'll be interesting today. I'm sure they'll have to address the situation. Like, you can't news dump at 11:45 p.m. and then not talk about it the next day.
Oh, of course.
So maybe there'll be
If we see Jake Muzzin today, that's a bad thing.
Yeah. I think there'll be more. I'm assuming there'll be more clarity. I'm hoping for more clarity about, you know, this is something. I think he has to miss 24 calendar days if you're on LTIR.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's next month. Is that the expected turnaround time? Or is this months, plural? So they'll have to give us as much information as they'd like, but that would be very helpful into determining what they're going to do with this chunk of change.
And if it's months, plural, they have to make a move.
Yes.
Because the defense is just not good enough right now. And then you deal with the issues or repercussions later. You tell Muzzin you can't come back. You tell Muzzin we want to go ultra-conservative with you. You tell Muzzin, hey, we'll scratch your back later if you just wait till the start of the playoffs. I don't really know, but I do know that injuries happen, and there's going to be an avenue for you to make the money work. There's a little squeeze at the start of the year, right? Because everybody's healthy. Mm-hmm. Everybody's healthy. You're trying to be the best you can possibly be. But within 2 weeks, 3 weeks, however long the season's been so far, they've had about $10 million cleared. So the money will clear at some point. You will have the opportunity to make the dollars work. You might have to have a tough conversations. You might have to trade someone away. You might have to dump something. But if Muzzin's going to be out for a significant period of time, you can't just spin your wheels the entire season waiting for him to potentially come back.
You can't.
You have to upgrade this roster.
Especially when you're putting your legacy on the line, Kyle Dubas. This is your year to do something.
100%. And you still have authority. You may not have spend two first-round picks authority, but you still have authority. Mm-hmm. You still have the ability to adjust to the situation that you're still in charge of. He should have the opportunity to react to the season. He should be able to react to one of his guys going down. He should have that ability. I'm not trading two first-round picks anyway for Jacob Chychrun, but I don't think he should be doing that. He shouldn't be trading that anyway, because the future of this team is sort of in doubt. They don't have contracts with Austin Matthews, William Nylander beyond a couple seasons, Mitch Marner beyond one more. The John Tavares era is now 2 years away from being done. So there's a lot of, you know, you have to save for the future now, and they've spent way too many first-round picks failing to get out of the first round.
I will say it's going to be tough if he's not around the team for a while, because he's a vet. He's well-respected. He's clearly besties with a lot of these core four guys.
He's the adult in the room in a lot of ways.
He is the adult in the room. He's the proven champ.
Yep.
And that's part of the intangibles that he brings. Performance-wise, we know where he's been for the last couple months, last season in general, facing these injury concerns. I just hope that he's able to make that impact off the ice. No idea how they approach what happens with LTIR and your involvement in the team, but that's going to be a loss. You know, I would think significant enough that bring it up.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that. Cam from Bethany says Niemelä in a first probably gets Arizona's attention.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it might, but you might need Topi Niemelä one day.
Yeah.
I don't know. The problem with Jacob Chychrun is, like, he's just not... He hasn't performed. Remember, he was penciled in start of, I guess start of last season. Penciled in. Maybe pen in.
Sure.
To the Canadian Olympic team, right? Mm-hmm. So high level. And then he doesn't play well for the whole year. And there's a lot of whining and complaining and requesting of trades. And you just don't know where this guy is at 100%. And can he step in and just play with Justin Hall?
I mean, he's still not played a game this season. He's had some injury concerns as well.
It's a risk in itself.
We have Jeff Merrick on at 7. Certainly something we're going to bring up with him. See if he knows any rumblings or grumblings on what's going to happen with this Jake Muzzin.
Or both.
Probably both. Anyway, that's your little sneaky news dump last night. What's going to happen with Jake Muzzin? That kind of leads us into what we wanted to talk about with where we're at, where Leaf Nation's at this morning, headed into another couple games on the road. Leafs are 7 games in, a 4-3 record. I think there's been some high highs and some low lows. The roller coaster experience of being Leafs fans and covering Leafs fans is what we've experienced in 7 games. So I think it's a good time to take a step back and look at our confidence ratings and our lack of confidence ratings on some players and how this season is going. We're going to add in the Dan Morning Show behind the glass.
And we're using some recency bias here, right?
Well, that's all you can
heavy skewed recency
7
bias?
Games to me is all recency bias, really.
Okay, so the 7 games is what's most important.
I'm not looking at last season. I'm looking at this season, these 7 games in a bubble.
So, like, preseason expectations plus what we've seen.
Yeah, sure. Okay. I love that. Okay, so we're going to start with, let's start with the positives. Who are you feeling most confident in on this Toronto Maple Leafs roster?
My guy, if we're using the context I just laid out, is William Nylander.
Oh, that's...
William Nylander is the only constant on this team. Hey, you served it to me. 7 points in as many games, 4 goals on a 5-game point streak. He's on pace, and this is the key. He's on pace to do exactly what he did last season, which is put up 80 points. And I have full confidence that he will.
And still get ridiculed for not always being the guy or, like, having a poor season.
That's the thing with Nylander. He's going to have 10 games where he's, like, the difference. You know, he basically carries the Maple Leafs to victory. Just is out of his mind, plays so well. You're like, oh my God, this is the William Nylander we need to bottle.
One game he steps back and says, like, trade Nylander.
Exactly. He's going to have 10 games where
all
you're
the
like,
uncles on Twitter hate 10, it.
10 games where you're getting trade calls. Like, this is the guy that's got to move. And then the other 62 games, he's just going to be William Nylander, which is a highly productive player that, again, you and I apparently have full confidence in, more so than any other player on the roster. So that says something about the start where William Nylander's like far and away shining star.
I'll add a little bit of why I also selected William Nylander. I think since preseason, and I know sometimes it's tough to take preseason, you know, you got to take it with a grain of salt, but he looked like a different Willie. He came in with the tinted visor. It ignited him as a player. His playmaking, his speed, that's certainly increased. The way he's looked with Nick Robertson as well and Tavares, no question that they've got the chemistry this time around. I've always been not a fan of the zone entries where you'd come in and like button hook and keep the play from getting deep in the zone. And like, he's a very patient guy and he's got finesse, but I've seen him drive the net more. I've seen him try to get below the red line. Like, he's attacking the zone a lot more than I have seen previously. And there's always been those clips of a little lazy William Nylander moment, right? You know, lacking on the back check, slow change, not covering his man. And people love to clip that. And, oh, there's Willie, trade Willie. But I haven't seen as many, at least, of those moments this year that shows a little bit more maturity, shows a bit more dialed in from a Willie that in the past, there has been those little moments that snowball into the trade Willie talks. But he's looking like he's taken a lot of steps. And another thing I love about William Nylander, he doesn't care about the drama.
That's another really nice thing.
He just goes out there.
It really is.
And
I'm
plays.
Glad you said that. That's a really, maybe he's sort of like, maybe he's adjacent to it because he is in a secondary role, but he doesn't, his demeanor with the media is, you know, we just made the assumption. I don't even think it's an assumption. It was laid out in plain sight. Mitch Marner does care about what people are saying about him. William Nylander decidedly doesn't. And I love that about him.
He literally just like goes in, he thinks chill it's guy. Funny. He giggles at it.
He finds it very humorous when he's in front of the media and like lining up to slides. I love that about him.
It's underrated quality with this team and the tension we've seen over the last week and a half with the core four and the media. It means a lot to me when you can just go out there and worry about hockey and not give a crap about all this other drama that the Toronto media stirs up.
Yes. What's crazy is if everyone had William Nylander's attitude, they'd be in a better spot.
100%.
And attitude is something that people always nitpicked with Nylander.
Look at him now.
But I feel like if you can put it aside, it's such a good position to be in. It's such a good personality trait if you're a really elite player like William Nylander is.
All right, so we're both in alignment with Willie Nylander being the guy we're most confident in right now. Let's send it behind the glass to the Dan Morning Show. What's up, guys?
Good morning.
Good morning. 1 day off your birthday.
Yeah.
26 in a day. How's it feel?
Oh, it feels great. you're lucky you're getting a good voice right now. Yesterday at 4 or 5 in the afternoon there, it was not the voice wasn't doing too well.
Danielle's coaching a basketball team. That's what he means here.
Cracking the whip.
But I have a
get on the line.
I have a propensity for losing my I have a propensity for losing my voice. We'll see how it is on Monday morning after we play some games. It'll probably be in really bad shape. So, interesting. Okay, well, let's start. Do you want me to rebuttal to the Nylander thing first?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. I don't know.
He's on my unconfident list big time.
Okay. You definitely need to.
Wow.
Yeah, big time. He's off to a good, fine start offensively. I even wrote it down, Willie Styles here, because I feel like he's more concerned sometimes with the way he looks than the way he plays.
Oh, come on.
No way, D.
Give me a break.
He's the same guy he's been throughout his career. He's no different. He has not changed. He has no grit. He plays with no tenacity. He's got no fight and bite to his game. He's all offense, all skill. And for a guy that they lean on heavily, this is part of the problem with this team. This is why they lose year after year in the first round of the playoffs. I can't overlook the fact that last year in the postseason, and this is why I actually applauded a lot of those guys. I mean, Kerfoot made an awful mistake in Game 6 against Tampa. He still ended up being one of their better players in that hockey game. Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner might have not been the most productive offensively. Heck, though, they worked their tails off. William Nylander has too many sleepy moments in games, and he still does it day in, day out, and that's why I don't think he's on my list.
You can't take last season
he's
out.
I still see the same trends. Okay. That's why he's not... To me, he's the same guy. I want to see something different. I want to see him go into the corner and dig out a puck. I see Robertson digging out pucks more than he does. And to me, that's unacceptable. That doesn't make sense for a guy that's a veteran like that. It shouldn't be that way.
All right.
We're watching a different William Nylander, I think.
Maybe, but that's the way I look at him when I see him. I pay attention to this. That's why they don't win. That's why they won't win in the playoffs. If you don't play that brand of hockey or add that element to your game, I'm sorry, you're not going to win. Look at, again, not to go back and reflect on what happened, but if we're going to go back and use, if we're going to, like, Matthews and Marner, the way they played, earned the respect of, certainly my respect, because they showed more of that bite to their game in the playoffs, some little bit of sandpaper, and Willie instead played with more sandpaper for the Swedish national team than he did for the Toronto Maple Leafs. That's a problem.
There was some sandpaper there for Sweden. You're right about that.
That's the problem.
I think he had a little chip on his shoulder, too, from getting kicked out of the playoffs, right?
And I hope so. I hope he did. But I'm just saying I see the same 7 games, small sample size, but I see the same kind of guy floating around in the neutral zone.
Oh, I don't see that.
Not hustling. It's the same type of deal. Willie's the same guy.
I think he's been their best forward not by far, because Tavares is in the conversation.
Tavares has probably been their best forward. Yeah,
I might go slightly Nylander, but Tavares has been really good. But he's lower on my confidence rankings because of what we saw. Like, that was a freak incident, but you're always... Which player is more vulnerable at this point? I feel like Tavares could go down at any second. He could have a decline in his play at any second because he's got more wear on the tires. Mm-hmm. But I just think Nylander... Like, what we've seen over the 7 games, I think we're going to see that through 82 with Nylander. That's why he's at the top of the list. And it is, as I mentioned, recency bias, because we'd all be crazy to not have Austin Matthews atop the list if it was about, like, the entire...
A 7-game sample, close your mind to what happened before this regular season. Okay, D, who are you feeling most confident in with the William Nylander slander?
Yeah, well, it's not. That's just it's a criticism that
it's a bit of slander.
Okay, no problem at all with Willie. I mean, that's how I feel. Most confident, Ilya Samsonov.
Yeah. Wow.
100%. He passes the eye test to me, and I don't care that we're talking about even just in the interim, short term here with Matt Murray out. I think it goes beyond that. I think you look at this guy. He at least to me looks like he could be a starter for this team and actually do the job, and has a bit of he's obviously been really good. But it seems like he's got the right temperament for the job, too, in between the pipes. I kind of really like what we've seen. He gets a little bit out of position at times in net, right? He's a little bit, and I think you mentioned it yesterday, Eilish, kind of gets
slip
a little
and
bit.
Slide.
Yeah, right? It's a
Cooper
great way
Alls.
To put it. Yeah, Cooper Alls. But I still think through the first seven games here, it's a big coup so far, a big win for them to have him because, I mean, think about what they were getting last year when Jack Campbell went down. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Ilya Samsonov has stepped in off of a couple really, down seasons, he's done a great job so far and I think is a big winner and definitely has my confidence right now.
He's definitely the team's MVP to this point. Mm-hmm. But I can't shake, he's kind of like Tavares for me. I can't shake the feeling that this could be fleeting. Like, it could all fall off.
Well, I gave you the stats yesterday that he started real hot with the Caps, like a 13-2 or something, and then fell off after a hot start. So that can be lingering in your mind.
One interesting thing about this entire exercise is that Samsonov is one of the few players that has, like, commanded confidence from the fan base. Mm. Like, no one else really is, like, proving otherwise. Like, I think you could put Tavares in that camp a little bit. We put
Nick
Nylander
Robertson.
In there. I don't have Robertson,
All right. But
I'll let you go on Robertson next. But like Samsonov is one of the few players that has earned confidence through the first seven games of the season. Should we?
Well, numbers alone, I completely agree with Dee's point, and he needs to be a guy that you have big confidence in. So
yeah, because everybody else has been.
What's your option?
Everybody else
Chalgren.
Has been, yeah, sort of stuck in the mud. And if he hasn't been brilliant. Which he largely has. Again, yeah. I feel like maybe playing slightly over his head. Leafs are in trouble.
All right, Josh, welcome to the show.
Yo.
What's up?
What's up?
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Swell. Okay, give us your confidence.
So we're doing our first one, like our most confident
first? Yeah,
we're
probably going to get through
someone
one.
That we haven't talked about, ideally.
Well, I decided to have a little bit of fun with this, actually. Oh. I'm going
You're
a little...
You're a fun guy,
I'm a fun guy. I'm like Kawhi. I'm picking the Leafs LTIR. As my most confident, because...
Hey, it's perfect timing for that.
Just when you think you're up against the cap and you need some cap space, the LTIR just comes in and...
They find a way.
They find a way.
Yeah.
It's kind of like
grinder.
A mirage, though, is it not?
I mean...
It's like stumbling in the desert and water suddenly appears. It sounds like you need it, but it's
but
not actually
the
there.
Water?
You can't actually use it. You can't. There's not actually water there. You can't use
That's
it
fair.
Even though it looks great. Like, they can use it. But
will they?
Will they use it?
I mean, we're talking about the things that we've seen so far, right? So,
so nothing else inspires
right,
confidence.
Right. Malgin goes, he's not playing well. Mm. But, Murray goes down, LTIR, we get Robertson, and he has, like, one of the best games he's ever played on the NHL level. So
you just love, you love saying LTIR, too. When
yeah.
you have, oh, LTIR. Oh,
LTIR.
Oh, we're good. LTIR.
Yeah. So that's my
I
most
love
confident.
It.
Okay, let's get one more quick confidence each. No?
No, we have the least confidence ranking.
I mean, I thought I got so many people I'm confident in.
Well, okay.
No, I don't. That's actually a lie. So we'll do non-confidence? Top?
Yeah.
Okay, go for it.
Chris from London's going to love this one. Pierre Engvall. Man,
yeah.
Tell me one thing he's done for me lately. Exactly. He... There's it's tough. So Kiefer said some stuff like, he is off-season ankle surgery could be why, quote, he's looking tentative and hesitant to skate. Well, you just said that right. His number one asset is supposed to be that he's fast and he's big and he can do stuff, and I haven't seen that at all. Engvall made a comment that like his ankle's getting better and better, but I wouldn't say that I feel normal. Anyway, he's coming off a season where he had highs and goals, assists and points. He has no points through seven regular season games. He's got 9 shots. He's been getting more offensive zone starts as well than he has in the past. So I guess you're hoping for a bit more production. You're getting none. I'm not asking him to score a goal every game, but impact the game, please. You're not finishing checks, as Bourne put out there. That clip was a perfect example of him literally making no impact in his shifts.
Business decisions, yeah. Which could be related to the ankle, but
man,
is it?
If you're injured, just, then don't
that's
play.
That's just an excuse. It's garbage, honestly. He's one of the most physically gifted players in this team, chooses to use none of those gifts.
Yes.
He got paid. He's been promoted. I think the promotion was warranted. He deserves to be a third-line player on this team mm-hmm. when he's playing well, but he hasn't played well yet. He's set up to be a difference maker on this team. Instead, he might have the single most disappointing start. So I think
100%.
You're right.
My
number one non-confidence, I mean, I wrote down Jake Muzzin and Matt Murray, but I think we leave them out of this because you have no confidence that they can play for this team. But I think it's Justin Hall, because no other player can have the puck on their stick and you're screaming at them to get rid of it, right? Because when the puck is on his stick, especially in the defensive zone, it's almost always a disaster. The biggest mistakes are made by Justin Hall. So if you can't even have confidence that he can make a play when the puck is on his stick, then I feel like he rises to the top of the list. He's had great games. He had the difference-making moment early on the season. He scored the winning goal. It was him. That was his play. That was his mm-hmm. moment. However, no one inspires less confidence when the puck is on their stick than Justin Hall.
There's so just like a tightness at the top of the in list. Your stomach.
And it's like he feels that. It's like a shared emotion.
I think he
what
certainly
What you're feeling,
does,
he's
Justin.
Feeling. And it's like, that's not good for anyone.
Well, remember the elation when he scored that game-winning goal to put
Very
them up
cathartic.
3-2?
It's like this
release
of emotion.
He was like, oh my God, I did that. Like,
yeah.
Everybody,
I surprised myself.
First star, game-winning goal. Yeah, that can't be enough to boost your confidence ratings with Justin Hall.
There are great things that he does. I think he's a good penalty killer. But again, if he has to make a play,
to know for me, dog.
Sometimes he doesn't. More often than not, he doesn't.
All right, Dan, morning show behind the glass. What's up?
Okay, yeah, I agree. I mean, Pierre Engvall was number one on my list too, Ailish. Cali Yarncroke is the guy I'm going to have. And it's only because it's a small sample size here, the seven games. But he was their most prominent acquisition, free agent acquisition in the offseason. And, you know, you're paying him just over $2 million a season. Same thing, Engvall got paid, right? Cali Yarncroke got paid. And they've been non-factors in the bottom six, so...
More term than anyone else.
Yeah,
he's
going to
be here for a long time.
Other than Morgan
time.
Riley, more
yeah.
term than any other forward.
Yikes. So I wouldn't say it's exactly been the best start for Cali Yarncroke.
No, it has not.
So, yeah, and just the staples of his game when, you know, we used to see him going well and being sort of that gritty forward. And he also has some goal-scoring touch, right? Like, he can actually put the puck in the net, but we haven't seen it. And he's at times looked just like he's kind of been a non-factor in general. So that's why I have him. I would put him second on my list behind Engvall, but Ilyich took him. So he'll be my choice for that.
They got to get Kampf and Yarncroke in the same line. It's got to happen.
Doesn't it seem too obvious, though?
It like, has to right? happen. It's
and didn't
like,
Yarncroke score a couple preseason goals, too? I was like
he's
fired up
yes.
about this guy.
He's surprising. I think he has two, maybe only just one goal
I think
this
it's
year.
Just the one goal he has this year. Yeah,
And obviously that's like, whatever, that's... It's not an issue, his goal scoring, but it's not...
More than Pierre Engvall.
More than Pierre Engvall. I mean, you look at the... Like, no one in the bottom six is scoring, so having one goal, you're like, at least I'm not the major
goose egg
right
on
now.
This one.
But I think they have to accentuate the best from their bottom six, and Kampf is there, and I think Yarncroke can be there, but he's playing with Pierre Engvall, who's not giving an honest effort, and Kerfoot's kind of miscast. Like, speaking of non-confidence, Alex Kerfoot. Anyway...
He's higher up than those guys. Okay, Josh.
Just to the bottom six point, they've combined for 9 points in seven games. So there's some production there.
There's some production.
What do you expect? The one thing I will say, and Josh brings this up,
well,
but it's true.
We're top heavy. We know this.
Exactly. And what do you expect from your bottom six in general?
You expect
Impact
something.
The game.
Okay, 7 points, a couple assists on each one. Maybe, how many goals is it? It's literally only two goals.
Well,
Yarncroke has one.
Wayne Simmons has a goal.
Wayne Simmons
is on pace for...
So Wayne Simmons isn't even really in your bottom six. He's got one of the goals. So Yarncroke has one. We have none from Engvall.
No. They are in your bottom six. Hold on. Wayne Simmons
He's in your bottom seven.
Is Wayne Simmons at times not a more valuable asset than other options? Like, is he not a guy that in the right situation, I'm not saying you have to play him every night, but in certain matchups, is he not the right guy to play?
Danielle, you know I'm on your side. Justin is not on the Wayne train.
We're on the Wayne train together.
100% we're on the Wayne train.
Even if we're in the caboose, we're on it.
100%. The point is, the bottom six hasn't been good enough.
I wholly disagree with that.
Are you guys, what are you guys watching?
I don't disagree. I think they have not been good enough, but I'm just saying that I like Wayne Simmons as an impact player at times.
The third line has done nothing.
But what do you expect?
The fourth line has already been broken up.
But
what do I expect?
What do you expect from the bottom six when the team is built around four guys that make up half of the salary cap?
I expect Keefe to put the right pieces in the right place. So create a checking line with your best three checking forwards and then figure out a fourth line that can give you something other than non-minutes. Some energy, something. So that's why Simmons is in. Mm-hmm. That's why I think Yarncroc and Camp should play together, maybe with Kerfoot, and then your next best three guys who can do something for you from a fourth line perspective, play. And right now they've got Camp on a fourth line who's basically having to carry luggage when he's expected to shut down the opposition's best line. He was up against Mark Scheifele's line with Simmons and Clifford and expected to do a job. Give him Yarncroc so you have a fighting chance. That third line has done nothing all year, and Yarncroc's one of the big issues behind that. That's the big issue right now. Yarncroc hasn't been good enough. You said it. And everybody else hasn't been good enough. And to have two goals between six, seven, eight players is not good enough through seven games. It's just not.
I don't know about the production part of it, but I agree with you in terms of how they've miscast sort of the guys. How does David Camp go from being on the third line all of last season, having great chemistry with Andre Kasha, being an impactful player, and then all of a sudden he's not on there?
David Camp has two goals. I just looked it up just so everybody knows. Malgin has one, Yarncroc has one, Kerfoot has one, and then the rest of zero.
Okay, it's decent. It's okay.
But I agree with your point.
I'm just saying, like, Camp's number four in my confidence list, and he earned a demotion this year.
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing? Anyway.
That was bizarre in general, but yeah.
They're trying to galaxy brain it a little bit. Can we, because we have David Camp, create this fourth line that can
shut down a top line? Wayne Simmons didn't score either. He just made the crazy pass.
Correct. He made the pass. So he went to Camp.
So Camp has
his two goals from the fourth line. Camp also scored early from a Jake Muzzin play. I think he was out there with others at the time. Anyway, they're not getting enough. And to suggest that they're getting enough is false. Because they're not.
Wait, was that your selection?
No.
Okay.
No.
Sorry, go ahead.
Speaking of the Wayne train.
Hey.
I'm actually going to go with the person related to the Leafs that I'm least confident in.
I don't know.
Is the Dwayne train. Dwayne The Rock
Johnson. I was like, wait, who?
For one.
Dwayne Casey?
For one very specific reason.
Yeah, he's cursed.
Let's go Leafs! Let's go Leafs! Let's go Leafs!
That was really rough to listen to.
I think that was inches away from him.
That was also Ailish Forfar's fault.
Oh, yeah, me. All me.
Especially from someone who has arguably the most charisma in the world.
Yeah.
It was rough.
I like that one. I like that you went off the board. We need that.
Somehow Zach Gaston-Reese.
He went unscathed. Not in the text line.
Yeah.
Matt and Dundalk is real rad about Zach Gaston-Reese. So, hey, text in 590-590. Most confident, least confident. We got a couple responses in there, but let's take a break and do a baby A-list, and we can continue with our positive, negative, yin and yang, Maple Leafs talk. Jake Muzzin on LTIR. What are they going to do with all that space? We'll talk to our buddy Jeff Merrick, the hockey hipster at 7, and we'll bounce all that through. But next is the A-list on the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ailish.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The A-list has arrived.
It's like World Cup music.
You never get the joke when I do that.
So say it, try it again. Try it again on me.
The A-list has arrived.
What's the joke?
Oh my God. Just press the A-list button.
Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
The never-ending controversy in the NFL involving Mike Evans and potential tampering and fandom. apparently has been resolved. I don't believe this. So Mike Evans was asked by reporters about the whole referee signing autographs stuff in the tunnel, which looked pretty convincing, and the internet never lies. And Mike Evans responded to these claims with the following clip.
What were you signing for the officials after the game?
I wasn't signing my autograph, I tell you that. I talked to a lot of officials, and we're all human beings. He's a nice guy. So we're just talking about, you know, golf. That's all we're talking about.
Talking about golf. That's all we were talking about.
Just signing a scorecard?
Come on, Mike Evans. I don't believe a single minute of that. Do you?
No.
No.
Like, what was he? He was physically writing something down.
This is what he said. Evans went to Texas A&M with the referee. The referee wanted the receiver's phone number to give to a golf professional so he could give Evans lessons. Lamberth, the referee, didn't have a card for Evans to write his number on, so he borrowed one from Sutter, according to NFL Network. You're telling me that you couldn't just go through his agent or ask him another time? You had to do it right there in the hallway with a pen in front of...
Here's why I don't think that's totally crazy. Like, Mike Evans wasn't, like, shocked when he was asked. It was like he was expecting to be asked about something, right? It was like he was expecting this interaction.
So the ref probably said to him, hey, buddy, I'll give you a couple extra yards if you sign my daughter's photo.
He said, hey, can I grab your autograph after the game? Like, yeah. I want to get it for my son. Maybe that sounds like Mike Evans would be like, oh, yeah, I was supposed to do that. Like, that makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't like Mike Evans was expecting that interaction. And for that reason, maybe the golf story holds some merit. But an autograph also holds merit. Although what he was signing it wasn't like a hat, wasn't a shirt. It was like a little card.
Yeah, it could have been a rookie card. It's gonna be worth millions.
I guess it could be a card.
Justin.
I think we'd know if it was a card, like a football card, though. Anyway, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt on this one. I'm choosing positivity.
We'll see which side of history you land on.
Leniency.
Anyway. Controversy is everywhere.
Which side of history?
Okay, so next on the A-list, Netflix. We just spoke about Netflix this morning. Let's see how you feel about this one.
Couple Netflix haters. I know you're...
It's fine.
I'm the hater.
Set to release an explosive corruption documentary a few days before the World Cup. Hell yeah. Here's the trailer. Just get ready. It's going to give you goosebumps.
Sepp Blatter was the godfather of football.
Being a member of FIFA is like being in the secret garden. There's an unspoken code. You can do whatever you want.
They wanted to be a force for good.
The lines between right and wrong blurred.
Wire fraud, money laundering,
racketeering,
tax evasion.
FIFA became a criminal organization.
Mr. Blatter!
You're looking at 75 years in jail.
You are innocent until declared guilty.
If I will feel a tsunami coming, trust me, you haven't seen it yet.
Qatar!
This is the World Cup of fraud.
Our business is our business.
Greed and politicking and backstabbing.
FIFA is under fire.
It's the biggest sports corruption scandal we've ever had.
The impacts go to every corner of the planet.
No comments.
Can I ask you how?
Do these people really care about the game?
There were people I knew quite well that had just been arrested.
Where is my security?
If one of us is corrupt, we all are.
Let's go, FIFA. Let's go, FIFA.
Now you have created a monster.
Now that's what Netflix is all about. That's what I want for my Netflix.
That's right.
I want good docu-series, mm-hmm. documentaries. And that has a little
bit of that
cliffhanger stuff as well.
November 9th, it's being released.
I'm ready to go.
It's going to be absolutely incredible. I don't know. They got me. What did he say? The World Cup of Corruption.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good quotes. You know, now you've awoken a monster.
FIFA's bad.
They're in trouble, let me tell you that.
But, they've already sort of turned it over. They're almost kind of bulletproof, too, which is just awful.
I hope not.
It's just such a powerful entity that they're... Like, even the new guy, I forget his Jean-Luigi, I think, something. Anyway,
whatever.
There's so much criticism for him, too. Like, it's, I don't know. It's, I mean, we're going to see truths for sure. And I don't think the corruption has necessarily left that organization, unfortunately.
No.
But it is like, it is powerful. And so was that trailer. There you go.
That's pretty good. That's how you do a teaser. Text in 590-590. What do you want to see a Netflix doc on next? Who do you want to see exposed, or what do you want to learn more about?
Not Live Golf.
No, it's coming though, sadly.
On their own YouTube channel, which has 43 subscribers.
Let's take a break. We got Jeff Merrick on the other side of the break, just in time for the Jake Muzzin LTIR news drop in the wee hours of the evening. And what is going on in Vancouver? It's the question of the month so far. That's next with Justin and Ailish on the Fan Morning Show.